5 to go. Lewis has been awesome. Let's it go.
Inbounds Turner, left side of the backcourt. Turner across the timeline, throws it from high on the right.
He hit it
just inside of half court.
Lane's on the other wing. He finds it.
Oh! 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 Sent it in, Jerome!
College basketball! This is March Madness!
National championship is in the balance. 13 seconds left. Florida leads it by two.
Uzan got to go.
Uzan, give it up. Cryer, 6 seconds, 5 seconds, short.
He walked, he can't touch it.
He can't, 1 second, and it's over. Florida is back on top of the college basketball world. Championship madness.
And that is how the 24-25 college basketball season ended, by the voices of Bill Raftery and Ian Eagle. This is CB with Ryan Time. Timmy Hall will be joining us shortly after he finishes his round of ping pong with head coach of your Ohio State football team, Ryan Day. And I'm not joking when I say that. He is currently in a match with Ryan Day, a very intense one, I might add. So he will be joining us shortly in the middle of this recording. But Ryan Time, Jacob Reimer, thank you for joining me today. This was for as good of a game it was, that really was an anticlimactic ending, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was nuts. I loved it. We were due for it. Everybody was complaining about the first couple rounds with no upsets, not much madness, and the final four for sure delivered three great games, and then ending with the national championship coming down to the very last possession.
It really did. Came down to that last possession. Was probably at the benefit of Florida going on, it's not necessarily a run, but the final half of that second half there, erasing that 12-point lead I believe Houston had was the highest it got to.
Yeah.
I do know for sure, looking at the graphic that CBS flashed on screen, I think you were probably a little heartbroken to be reminded that Kansas still has the largest comeback and championship game history at 16 points against your Tar Heels just a few years ago.
Oh, but it's not the most embarrassing choke job as of now. I know it was in the final four, but with how Houston getting to the national championship.
That's an interesting debate we could probably get into it sometime. That's interesting. Yeah, I think the magnitude of it, with it being Cooper Flagg's potential last game in college basketball, the way it happened, blowing a 7-point lead with about a minute and some change left in that game, and they can't complete a simple inbounds pass on a out of bounds play.
Yeah, no, there was no form of press break there. It was literally just get open, seal your guy, and it eventually was throw it up into the air to Cooper Flagg, who was standing basically under Houston's basket. And that is one thing you absolutely cannot do against Houston. Houston gets the steal and ends up being a putback dunk, and then other things transpire. You got the questionable over the back call on Cooper Flagg, which, don't even, like, Cooper Flagg, you're smart enough. Don't even put it in that position to make an official make that call, you know? It's from where the official made the call to me, I can see where he's coming from on that. But there's other angles where it's like, I don't know, maybe with how the game was being played, that may have been a play on to me.
Exactly right. You nailed it. Don't put them in the position to make that call. They did. That was history. Then we get this matchup between Florida and Houston, which I would think for any championship game, it feels common now to expect maybe a slow start. Teams are a little tight. There's a lot of anxious energy in the air between Houston and Florida to start this game. For most of the game, honestly, it felt like Florida was just not in rhythm at all. I mean, all of the turnovers, the turnover differential between them and the Cougars was pretty drastic at times throughout that game. And you nailed it a lot during the game talking to us. The bigs, especially the front court for Florida, were really not handling, I think, the athleticism of the bigs for Houston very well. And Alex Condon, for much of that game, looked pretty lost.
Yeah, there was just a lot of times, we were talking about it earlier, where like they would be in a pick and roll action and it's like they would get it and not be looking to attack. Like they were almost like afraid. They were looking to pass it in that little like big to big action there on the block, kind of, or high low, whatever it could have been for like an easy dump in layup. But yeah, there was moments where it was like, yeah, you got a wide open layup and you're 6'10 basically, and it's just not converting. And in this kind of game at this stage, the national championship, You can't be missing those kind of opportunities.
And maybe the referees were also playing a little tight to begin that game, because that first half, we can fact check this later. I think it was like around 3 or 4 total foul calls in the first half. I did see guys in the media, mainly Mike DeCourcy, who does great work for Sporting News, Big Ten Network, Fox. He mentioned how it seems like the referees were really letting a lot go, and on one end, you kind of like that because it keeps the flow of the game going well. We were on pace for ending this game at around 10:30 last night. It was great for my sleep schedule. But yeah, it got to a point where it felt like they were letting a lot go. And then maybe they got that message at halftime. They came out and Houston seemed like they were in the bonus by like the 13, 14 minute mark.
Yeah. And it was just going to be one and ones, free throws for the last hour of basketball we were going to get from that. But yeah, the first half went by so quickly. There was a point where I think it was like 7 fouls to 3. And this is where a lot of like Houston fans will get upset looking at this. It was Florida with the 7, Houston with the 3. And
that
was
the first technical from the bench from Florida really kind of turned this into the other direction.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden it was Houston had 8 and Florida had 7. It was just like, oh, how did we get here? Like, it's immediately so many fouls called in a quick matter of time. And it's just like, oh man, we're drawing on the line of a ref show here in the national championship.
And you can complain about referees in almost every single game setting. I think there were, though, quite a few instances in that second half where it was pretty questionable. I think there was like a 5-point swing on a Houston shot that was still on the rim. I believe it was Condon that might have knocked it off the rim.
I think it was Hernan, what's his name, the number 3?
Han Logan. I can never pronounce his name, but yes. The guy that got hurt pretty bad in the conference tournament a year or so ago.
Yeah.
He gets it off the rim. Houston goes into transition. I think it was either a Richard or a Clayton 3 on the other end.
I believe it was a Richard 3. Clayton found him in transition in the corner running the sideline. But yeah, ultimately ended up being the difference in the game, which
is
crazy.
And then you have the Chinyelu technical foul. He doesn't think he's got the foul call correct. He slams the basketball. That's an easy technical that they're going to call right away. But that felt, I mean, for some stretches of the final 5-6 minutes, that felt like it was going to be a pretty big difference maker, because with a normal foul, I mean, Juwan Roberts isn't a great free throw shooter. He only makes 1 of 2. But Cryer goes to the line, makes 2 there. That's a 3-point possession. It felt like that was going to be the difference there.
Yeah, well, Juwan Roberts made some big free throws in the game before that. I know that.
That's true. That's true. And then guys that were pretty sharp, no pun intended, but Emmanuel Sharp, pretty sharp, I would say, for most of this tournament until about the final couple of minutes there.
Yeah.
Where I think he's getting a lot of maybe unjust blame for the turnover that Richard knocks the ball off his knee. I think that's just a great defensive play that resulted in that. But yeah, I mean, everyone's going to be pointing to the errant no-shot opportunity in the final seconds that we played the soundbite from.
Yeah. I was going to say, let's talk about those two plays there at the end, because on that first drive where it was a great strip by Richard, clutch in that time to rip it off his leg and get the ball back going the other way. To me, though, when he's on that drive, like, it looked like he was just going to nowhere. And there was 3 Florida
definitely,
guys
definitely
around
didn't look
him.
It like it was going to the rim. It was more of like a drive. I mean, it almost, I'm thinking in my head where his placement was. He wasn't even like in the lane. He was kind of going down the side in like the wing area.
So like if he would have gone up, it would have been a very weird angle at like a floater. If he's leaning into a guy to draw contact, he may have been able to draw some glass, but the angle on it would have just been so weird to me. And it's just like, I cannot recall. I would think that Florida was up in that time with given the circumstances of it. But why don't you're instead of dribbling into a crowd, bring that back out. And I mean, for how good Houston has been shooting the ball this year, you're already got that penetration on the inside. Look for your shooters spread out. I mean, there's 3 Florida guys right there on you. Someone's got to be open.
Yeah, it just hurts not to get a shot opportunity there, because then you foul Aberdeen the next possession. He goes 1 of 2 over the line. You have a chance to tie with the 2, win with the 3. And you still had the opportunity to put yourself in the position to win that game.
Yeah, and that was a crazy press break too, because Houston, it looked like they were trying to...
They almost threw it away.
Yeah, and I'm just going to call a spade, Aberdeen traveled. His foot dragged a little bit.
That's interesting. I've seen people say that. In real time, it looks like the contact might be happening simultaneously. I understand.
Yeah.
If you slow it down, you can maybe take a look at if the feet shuffled just before he got there. I'm not going to put a lot of blame in the referee's eyes for that, just in live speed.
Yeah.
Trust me, there are plenty other calls that you can complain about. I'm personally not going to go there, but just the fact that it even got to that point, it's amazing that these teams at this, the highest level struggle so hard with press break, almost like they never see it.
Four of the best teams ever.
Almost like they never see it until they get to this stage. And yeah, I mean, I thought for the hottest second that that thing was going out of bounds and we have drama on our hands.
Yeah, Walter Clayton was very close to throwing that ball away. It was almost like he panicked. And like he really Definitely. Wasn't being pressured all that much. It's, and
yeah,
a guy like Walter Clayton who has made some big time shots all throughout this tournament. And like, it just looked not like him to just basically throw it ahead of Aberdeen.
Yeah,
and
I just don't into love that no man's land. I want that guy at the line. I want
it
Clayton
is so,
Jr. taking
It is so
the
weird
shots.
To me that he takes the ball out of bounds on those inbound plays. It's great when they've got guys streaking forward, like Houck was streaking forward. I can't remember if it was in the Auburn game or if it was in this Houston game, and just because no one else was open, and then he caught it, and Clayton immediately stepped back in because no one was on the ball for some reason, and stepped back right back in, got it. It may have been that play.
Yeah, if you're expecting...
Because then he threw it up to Aberdeen, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, if you're expecting them not to foul on instant touch, I get that. You can get the ball in and then dish it back to your guard and let him go. But yeah, he just kind of felt like he was almost panicked, like maybe his internal clock of the 10-second...
Yeah,
was off. I really can't explain it because, again, I want him to be at the line, or I want a Richard at the line. Aberdeen's a good player, but again, that's probably not who you're targeting.
Right.
But the just weird parts about that game as a whole, even if it was Houck that got fouled, he's an 81% free throw shooter, and at the end of that game, he was missing free throws left and right.
Yeah,
I think it was just the pressure of the moment get to these guys.
Yeah, I mean, and we can go to that very last possession. Like, the lights may have been a little too bright for it, you know? Like, it just felt like Kelvin Sampson has been a mastermind throughout this whole tournament and just his whole career of great sets and coming out of a timeout with the national championship on the line, and it just looked like there was nothing there. Now, Florida did a great job of just kind of switching everything and taking all that away, but it still looked like there was no form of set that was happening.
Well, what was weird about it to me, and again, when you freeze frame and slow things down, anything can look good in any scenario, but there was on that release to Sharp, I mean, it was a deep shot, but he at least had it open. I don't know if he just kind of contemplated it too long, and then they closed out
Pull
well
the thing.
On him. But man, I mean, in that scenario, you dream of those opportunities to take that shot. Just take the shot.
Coming off of an elevator screen, it looked like, but... And he's got all the time in the world. Walter Clayton looks like he fell asleep. I heard him back in the post game say he thought it was going to be a back screen. So he was yelling at Condon to say, like, hey, screen's coming. And then all of a sudden, Sharp slips it, and it forms into an elevator screen. And he's like, oh, shoot, I got to recover. Great recovery on that closeout to give a great contest. Sharp needed a little Marcus Page on the double pump to to try to get that off. But, yeah, it really stinks that they didn't even get a look at having the chance to win the game there.
But you nailed it. I mean, when you're down two like that, it opens the door for both opportunities. And that's your opponent's worried about you getting to the rim. You have those opportunities to get free looks from the perimeter. You just, I don't know what else to say other than you just got to get that shot off. And it just, it's a shame that it didn't happen. I mean, obviously everyone's having flashbacks to the Villanova shot late in the game. When's that tournament? Again, I'm sure that's not great memories for you. I'm not trying to bring it up because of that. But man, like everyone wants to see that shot.
I brought up Marcus Page, so it was fresh on both of our minds.
Of course, but when you have the opportunity, you want to at least go down swinging. And I'm sure, and I don't need to put it in Emmanuel Sharp's head, but he's going to be thinking about that for a while. But I guess if you want to have the positive outlook for him, he does have eligibility left.
Yeah.
He could come back and... Houston, for all really considered, they have a lot of young talent coming in. They should be a top 5, top 10 program next year.
100%. I've been seeing a lot of way too early polls out there already, which just makes no sense because of what this transfer portal is. Like, I'm seeing guys on there with like 0.2 points per game in the starting lineups of projected starting lineups.
Yeah, but it's all ridiculous.
But yeah, Houston is, it seems like, at the top of everybody's list. Whether it's number one, it's still right there in that top 5. They've got a great class coming in, and yeah, Emmanuel Sharpe could come back, which would be huge.
Well, we are being joined live right now.
What are you talking about? Because I have to leave in like another 3 minutes. How's the pod been going?
What did you beat?
Just so everybody knows that's listening to the pod, we recorded this on a day where, did you guys discuss this?
We did. What happened? Because you missed it.
Head coach Ryan
to
Day,
play ping pong.
Yes, was in the station today, so right in the middle of our recording, and I got to play the coach to a game of 11 that went into a deuce. I won by 2 points. It game to 11, we got to the 10-10 deuce score, and I wound up getting him by 2. And he is very competitive, and you can see the tennis skill with Coach Day. And then I played Jerry Emig, the sports information director, 2 quick games to 11. I kind of dusted him, but you could also see the skill. And the technique is there with Jerry Emig as well. But I thought it was crazy as far as the basketball goes. Houston was my pick. They took it right down to the wire. Just a tough, tough team. You guys both know that. And they just didn't have enough in the tank as far as the playmaking and shot making to get it done.
Well, it looks like you're getting called into the studio right
now.
I'll see
you guys.
We'll see you in a little bit, Tim. Thanks for your quick analysis there. So I guess let's take a look forward. We've done a great job breaking down this game, not to pat ourselves on the back, but let's look forward to the offseason next year. Obviously, you mentioned before Tim got here the way too early top rankings, top 25s, you name it. I think every outlet out there seemingly has one at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Just on the surface level, and you kind of touched on this, but how much emphasis do you put on it? How much do you think that's going to be accurate? I feel like every year the team that gets put at the highest in the Big Ten seemingly just does not meet up to expectations. I think Purdue was that this year. And ironically enough, they made the run to the Sweet 16, but were the sixth seed in the Big Ten tournament. So I guess my question to you is what are you expecting to see at the top of the sport next year?
Well, I'm right there with Houston being right there, because I think Sharp will have a chip on his shoulder and want this memory out of his – he's never going to forget about it, but right. he could easily erase it just by coming back 1 year, and with the roster that they have coming in, with not knowing transfers that they could bring in either, that Houston's very much easily could be right back in that position next year.
Yeah. Again, Houston's got some great freshman talent coming in, which you can kind of extrapolate with, but you really don't know how players are going to perform in the first year, or if it's their only year, like a Jace Richardson, which is, that was a crazy story. He announced he's going to the draft, likely going to be a lottery pick. So good for him, but that presents challenges for programs like Michigan State, who expect players to be there longer than 1 year. They plan for that in their roster building. They have to now find solutions to fix that problem. But a lot of these lists, like I think Michigan's a great example. Yaxel Lindeborg is being considered to be on the roster for next year, which, I mean, yeah, he did commit in the transfer portal, so you kind of have to go with that assumption for now. But there is some real debate on if he stays in the NBA draft or he comes back. But man, if he comes back, I don't expect Danny Wolf to, but I mean, just pairing him with Merez Johnson, who came over from Illinois, it's going to replenish the front court for them.
Yeah, and you got Tar Heel Elliott Cadell now
right.
up in Ann Arbor too,
right.
that thrives in pick and roll offenses. And if that's what Dusty May wants to get at with forming this front court, that could be pretty nasty seeing those kind of lobs thrown around up there to those guys.
And looking towards next year, I think a program that's close to your heart and also has some pretty, I would say it's pretty urgent to get some results here with the program ever since his first year. But what's going on at North Carolina and the roster turnover is, I think, a little interesting. I don't know the great words to put into it, but I just saw today that, was it Ian Jackson that entered the portal?
Yep.
So you've had quite a bit of roster churning going on that we're there at North Carolina. Do you view this as a positive thing because it wasn't heading in the right direction with Hubert Davis, or do you think this could have some deeper meaning to it?
I think we saw it in the tea leaves throughout the year where his playing time, where Ian Jackson's playing time decreased significantly since like the December part of the season, like where he was on an insane stretch of 20 point a game nights, really. And I'll be honest, I don't think it looks great because I was fully expecting him. If anything, it would be go to the NBA, maybe test it, or just keep his name in, but then still be back because he was fully going to be the guy in the offense that it's revolved around being the scoring, main scoring option, because he's showed at times throughout the year that he is an electric scorer. And losing him, where I think St. John's is a very likely possibility going back up to New York and playing for Rick Pitino. But yeah, they got Caleb Wilson coming in. I like the two pickups they've already got in the portal right now with Jonathan Powell and Visar, but they don't have a true one. You need Drake Powell back for
There's
sure.
There's not a lot of stability in terms of established players, in terms of the top end scoring. I mean, obviously RJ Davis, after 7 or 8 years, it feels like he's finally exhausted his eligibility.
Yeah.
You mentioned Cadeau. He's out the door. Washington left. He's off to Vanderbilt and Ian Jackson. So there's a lot of, I think the establishment of the team has kind of been broken up. It's interesting to see how these teams rebuild themselves to face the pressure. I mean, obviously Hubert Davis is going to face it regardless of the contract extension. He allegedly, I guess it was reported officially that he signed back in the winter.
In December, yeah. Before the Alabama game, where they get rolled.
And it wasn't even announced until about 2.5-3 months later. Very strange operation on that. But regardless, there is pressure on not just Hubert Davis in North Carolina, but I think just the ACC as a whole to start stepping back up.
Yeah, for sure. I'll be honest, I'm not confident, just because we're seeing now in college basketball that you need experience to win at this highest level. I mean,
what gave you that first idea? All the teams in the Final Four?
Well, I mean, what hurt Duke was their two inexperienced go-to guys making some bonehead plays down the stretch. But I'm looking at a team that is already off to a hot start in the ACC in the transfer portal, and that's Louisville. I mean, on the ESPN way too early, top 25, they're number three. Pat Kelsey's got, I am loving what he has brought in. You've got Mikael Brown Jr., the number 8 overall guy in the class coming in, and then he brings in Ryan Conwell and Isaac McNeely. That just what's the other ones that came for? Oh, Adrian Woolley from Kennesaw State.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He's a really good guard for them.
Yeah, that is a nasty core right there to build around.
Absolutely. No, it's always interesting to see how these pieces mesh together. You bring in great talent, but does that talent work well together is always the question.
Yeah.
Real quick, a team that we already touched on and I want to look forward to is Michigan State, because, again, we see Richardson enter the NBA draft, but we also saw players like Trey Holloman enter the portal. So maybe some unexpected players thought were, you know, establishment guys were mentioning, like maybe in Ian Jackson. This is Trey Holloman, who's been around longer. Was a key piece to that team, eventually kind of moved towards the bench, coming off the bench later in the year. But Michigan State and how Izzo's, he's kind of adverse to using the portal too much. He's used it to supplement when needed, but I'm interested to see how that team, losing pieces they expected to be back, will handle that.
Yeah, I mean, Jace Richardson 100% would have probably been on everybody's All-American list starting next year. But, yeah, he's gone, and just looking at some of these projected starting lineups, especially for Michigan State, I don't see a true scoring option. Like, right now you've got Jeremy Fears, who really was disrespected by defenses and kind of just letting him hang out there and just kind of just create and clog up the paint when he's got the ball. And then Jordan Scott, the 81st overall in the ESPN 100 coming in. Cohen Carr could come back. Jackson Kohler, Carson Cooper. But those three aren't elite.
They're established guys, but yeah, they're not going to scare a team.
They're not elite level scorers.
They're not.
Yeah.
Which is,
Cohen Carr will scare you with his athletic ability and dunking. Yeah. But
it feels unusual for an Izzo team. It always feels like there's an established guy they could turn to. Maybe not as much this year. I mean, they did have pieces that they kind of have relied on. Jaden Akins is the name I'm probably thinking of there from previous years that have
Tyson Walker's
grown.
Another good one.
Yeah. Absolutely. Who have grown through the program, again, because they do not love to use the portal that much.
Mm-hmm.
They build those guys up into becoming consistent guys. It feels right. Again, the portal's not closed yet, but as of right now, that's a program where you'd have to worry about maybe who's going to step up for them.
Yeah, I'm definitely not confident in it right now. They're going to have to. And Izzo wasn't happy when he was asked about the portal during their run to the Elite Eight. He was like, I'm focused on this team right now and not worried about the portal. And with some other words in there where he was a lot more angry. But yeah, he's now got to attack it real hard.
Yeah, and we'll see how that goes. He has the time to do that now. We'll see if he actually does it. Let's finish up real quick, because I don't expect him to be back anytime soon. So let's just wrap up real quick with the Ohio State program. Some news that's kind of happening in the moment here. So when we record, maybe even another player gets added to the mix. I know they want to add one more at least, but I think the first name was Brandon Noel. Was that correct? From Wright State, he committed to Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
19-point per game guy. Was actually pretty good in his 3 years at Wright State, a double-digit scorer in all 3 years. I think he put up 20-plus against Kentucky on the road this year. I always get a little nervous with Wright State or Horizon League guys. Maybe that's just the Tanner Holden effect. That's kind of, you know, holding on to me, no pun intended. But I think what I'm struggling to understand with maybe the roster build right now is I've been seeing some projected lineups, and obviously Noel is going to be in that four spot because he's a 6'8 guy that can play more of on the perimeter and slash and score. And then obviously Tilly will be at the five. The question is how does a guy like Devin Royal handle the potential three spot and defending and playing against wings? A guy that shot below around 27% from three, not the typical three that maybe you would want to expect or play him at there. Personally, I would love to keep Royal at the four, maybe have Noel as a filling guy, off the bench guy for him, and then add a three to feel really comfortable with a Micah Parrish type playing that position. But what is your thoughts on maybe just the transfer addition right now, maybe the transfer additions, and how this lineup's going to look?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I would rather Devin Royal be at the four for sure. And then go out and get another three. That's why like a Jonathan Powell would have been perfect in the system.
You had to steal him, didn't you?
I mean, hey, Ian Jackson's available, you know?
That's right.
Ian Jackson's available.
We are still going, Tim. Thanks for joining us. We were actually... Yeah.
What the hell are you talking about now?
You joined us for the right time. We moved
it's
on
the
to
end,
Ohio
right?
State. It is.
It's the end.
We were discussing this transfer commit for the Buckeyes.
How about it? Wright State, Rowan
Brandon,
College.
Is it Brandon Noel or Brandon Noel?
Let's go with Noel, like your North Carolina player from yesteryear.
But really the topic we were hitting on is the questions on the lineup selection for this, because what feels like it's going to happen is Noel would move into the four spot. Tilly is obviously the five. And this puts Royal at the three, which gives us some pause and concern for how he can A, guard the wing spot, and B, play that perimeter role as a 27% three-point shooter.
So you guys share in this opinion, because Jacob, when we talked about it, you expressed the same concern about Devin Royal being the three. And then we talked to Adam on Buckeye Roundtable, Adam Jardy, the Dispatch, this week, just to get a read, and he was all over this. He knew he couldn't say what, because it was from a source that told it to him off the record, which I respected. So he couldn't tell us on the show that it was going to be the young man from Wright State that was committing, but he knew there was going to be an announcement on this Tuesday that we're recording this podcast in the middle of the portal season. But he told us that the coaching staff has been looking and wanting this switch for Devin Royal. That's their idea. That's their plan. And I think when you consider the way that he was obviously their best scorer inside.
Absolutely.
We agree. There was no other scorer inside, only accidental, right? Or set up by Bruce Thornton giving you a lob. Or
100%.
Maybe once a game down the stretch, Sean Stewart was able to do something in the post.
Hey,
right?
Bradshaw showed flashes.
Yeah. It was that one flash, that one game, right? And he has flashed out of town as he's
but
going
do they
away
expect
in the
him to
season.
Change his body type? Like, do they want him to get away from that post presence
that's
style?
That's a good question. I think maybe they want him to be faster, right? You talked about the lateral quickness, and I think you want to get 3-point shots up, right? You need to be in the gym shooting 500 threes a day. He showed the ability to make the three, but the percentage is not good enough, right? With what you want from that Micah Parrish type of spot with what he did. But I can be down for that, and I think it also gives you some flexibility to put him back at the four if need be, and you can change your plan right away. If you prepare for him to be the three, and it's not maybe the best thing, when you have a 7-foot center, I think that makes a 6'7" scorer like Devin Royal, who also can get on the rebounds. We've seen him.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen his, I don't know what his average was this year. It was probably like 4.7 to 5.0. I'm sure he was the leading rebounder on the team. Maybe Sean Stewart caught him in the end. We know it wasn't the other guy. But I think we can never say we know because they're mid-major players that are bumping up in competition.
Yeah.
But we asked for something.
We used a comparison of Tanner Holden. Like, that was
exactly.
That's a concern.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And that one was a rough one for me. I'd like to know more on what happened there because felt like that should have worked. We've seen plenty of mid-major players that have proven track records of numbers, transfer up to other schools. If the system was right, if they liked the coaching staff, and they flourished. I mean, absolutely flourished. And I would think basketball is basketball. Being around for that long is being around for that long. You just can't buy experience. And I wanted a change from grabbing potential guys, five-star recruits that really got, you know, shunned out of their first pick, first college choice, because it was either they weren't patient enough or the fit wasn't right. But I needed to see experience and numbers no matter what school or conference it was. And they did that with these two. So I at least have to say that. And Gabe Cupps now looks like that guy that you wanted to be. If he finds some level of play that we haven't seen yet, we all would love that because that would be tremendous if he could find it. But he's off the bench now. You're not relying on him. Same goes for a guy that's been injured his whole life in Tayson Chapman. If he can find some level of game that can make it in the Big Ten. So we'll see.
It's really interesting the way that the roster is shaking out because it seems like the guards are more on the smaller end. And now you're getting bigger in the front court. It's almost like two contrasting styles. I'm curious to see, and I'm sure there's people smarter than me that know the roster breakdown and what's left and what they can add. I think I've heard maybe one more guy's what they're looking for.
Yeah, do you think Sean Stewart leaves because of this?
Well,
like when you had
it could be
Bradshaw
the
came in
effect.
And Felix.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's the other thing you have to think about is not just filling your roster, but when you fill your roster, someone that you thought you were going to have stay then decides to leave because of what it does. But didn't we want Sean Stewart to come off the bench anyway?
I think this is great for him. I think, honestly, this is great.
But I hope he takes this in a good way and understands that he still would be an important cog and play 20 to 25 minutes depending on foul trouble. And
absolutely.
You need more than five guys to play basketball.
He's more of a defensive player than what this Wright State kid is. So I think he is needed in that role.
Very much needed. I don't want him. Sean, I don't want you to go anywhere. You showed enough. I want you on this team.
But if it is true, they still have one more spot. I'm curious if they go more in the five direction to back up Attili or if they're good with Yagovan being the backup guy. And maybe
guy we haven't thought about a lot this offseason.
And maybe focus it more on like a wing / bigger guard. Those are big decisions that are coming down. I know that they're looking at that forward from Delaware?
Oh, man.
John Camden was his name?
If you can get him. I mean, I don't know. I would think that even though he could play a 3/4, probably also a scoring 4.
Yeah.
Because Camden's also a 6'8", too. I think it's almost the same build and body style. 6'8", 220. Maybe I'm wrong by an inch or a few pounds.
I think that's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But also a big-time scorer and rebounder from a mid-major conference who's at least a junior, I want to say, looking for one more year of eligibility.
Yeah.
I would think that the Wright State commit, that Noel, that takes Camden out of it. Just as we sit here.
It's understandable if it does.
And this can change by the time you listen to the podcast with the way the portal season goes.
I'm just thinking in terms of which depth is more important, whether it's getting another five to fill in that position, because you never know with foul trouble and whatnot what happens to Tilly. Like, you have to be prepared for that. Or if you feel like you need another guy that can fill the role where Devin is moving to, if you want to move him up to the four on certain lineups, you could slide in someone to play that three.
What do you think about that, Jacob?
I think with how the roster is shaping up right now, I would rather a wing come in and a long athletic guy that can space the four a little bit. But Diebler has mentioned how he wants to get to a pace where they're getting up and down and still defending extremely well. And that's how you can generate those points in transition, is a guy that can jump into passing lanes and get energy points that way, where you're going the other way and laying it in for 2 points. I think that's the direction they should go with this.
I mean, because you can honestly tinker with that front line, and maybe Nyegavon comes in and gives you some minutes. Maybe Sean Stewart bumps to the five, depending on foul trouble or depending on how they want to go, big versus small.
It presents multiple lineups that they can roll out there, where they can go with a big lineup and putting Royal at the three. Or like we've kind of seen this past year, where Sean's playing the five and Royal's playing at the four, and you have another long athletic wing playing the three along with Bruce and Juni at the one and two.
Yeah. And finally, you can't rule out, I know they like Amari Bynum a lot, the freshman that's coming in that has that body type of more of like a – a tweener four who could probably fill in those opportunities if Sean Stewart goes somewhere else during this portal season. He's at least a body that could fit what maybe they want to play at that four.
Precisely.
Spot. So they have options. I do side with Jacob, though. I think they should probably go for more of a wing for the last spot, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's, you never know what to think. There's really no roadmap. Everything that you think is going to happen, or the names that we would in our text threads throw out, they're all gone, like, the minute that you start thinking about them. You know, when you think that you could get a guy like Dalen Swain.
The no contact tags.
Yeah,
It seemed like Heidi was gone 2 days later, although off to Texas.
You had two Purdue guys go in the portal that you could have made a case for. Heidi, specifically. I still remember that dunk he threw down in the tournament last year. Like, you're like, oh shit!
You had me off my seat.
Kind of athletic, right? Like, yeah, I didn't know that about you.
He's had a few of those this past year too.
Hits the set three.
He hit
about
a big
45%
in that game against Houston.
Hit the one that tied
led
it.
That led to the play at the end with Uzan getting the layup. Yeah,
how good was Braden Smith in that second half against Houston?
15 assists.
He assisted on every basket in the second half,
and he's coming back next year.
And he's got two really good bigs with Clough coming in from
Clough.
South Dakota State. And then obviously Jay Cup and Renzo there.
That race to lead the conference in assists will be fun with him and Elliott Cadeau.
You wonder, Clough's going to have to prove it in those first, you know, 5 or 10 Big Ten games. But when you already have Kaufman and Wren coming back, and if Clough is going to be.
And Daniel Jacobson's going to come back from injury too. And he was projected to be their big 7-footer of the year.
That's why Heidi left. And Berg, their other big guy. But no, this will be interesting before the portal season finishes up, just to see what team Ohio State puts together. But I'm going to get to the offseason. I'm going to hold out hope like I always do. I guess I'm a sucker like that. But I'm going to go into next season wanting it, hoping for it, believing that they can find a way to get it done. How could their roster issues get any worse? It could. Yeah. They're due, right? You keep saying this. They've got to be due. The miss on Michi, the miss on Aaron Bradshaw, and for most of the season, Stewart as well, until he didn't pick up until late. He didn't see the field, as they would say, or feel it, get it, until late in the season. And it was probably a little bit too much for him. But, you know, if Chapman can give this team anything, the freshman, you mentioned Bynum, the freshman can give you anything. If they aren't too offensively challenged as freshmen, that's going to be big. But just to have, you know, Cups and Chapman, guys like that, behind Bruce Thornton, who, you know, is going to dominate minutes, and John Mobley, you'd think John Mobley would take a big step with how good he already was.
Yeah, I think he's a serious breakout candidate already for next year, especially with in a backcourt with Bruce Thornton, where the attention's going to most likely be all on Bruce, but you can't, like, zero in on one, because then that's going to allow the other one to pop off. And
all right.
I would rather zero in on Bruce than anything.
Well, that's it for me, Timmy. You can get back
to
ping pong and all the other stuff
you're doing. Oh, stop it. Stop it. You playing golf yet, Evil?
No, I'm not.
It's golf season.
No, I'm not good enough for that yet.
It's time for the Masters.
I will be watching that.
Good. I didn't know you were a Masters guy.
I will. I'll watch the majors. Absolutely.
Good. That pleases me.
You got a winner for it?
I always side with Morikawa just because he has my name. Seriously, I always support him and Jason Day if they're in it. So I guess I would go with Morikawa in this spot.
Yeah, Morikawa's good at being in the mix.
Yeah.
He's one of those
really
guys.
Good pick.
He's one of those guys you find there. I think Victor is due to chase it. He's going to be there in the end. Rory, the way he plays.
So say, give me Rory to complete the Grand Slam.
I got to stick with Scotty.
First time that he's had multiple wins before the Masters.
Yeah, that's true.
Look at him taking the one seed just like basketball.
Oh, I'm going to go with the odds on favorite and Scotty, though.
There we go.
I'll take the Florida.
Yeah.
Who's ending this thing? Me? You?
I mean, you
usually
do,
it, right?
But
nope, I didn't.
No.
You
did. I can.
All right, well, I don't know when we'll be talking to you next.
It's over.
I'm sure it will be sometime here, maybe later in the spring or in the summer. But thank you for listening. This has been Mad About Hoops. We will talk to you soon.